I do feel like SEO, like the traditional way it's been done, has a finite lifespan now. In the age of generative AI, even the stuff I'm doing, I'm using GPT and I'm crafting these posts and I'm doing it consistently. It's working. But I know that that's a finite strategy. The thing for us is we want the growth because we're a startup. Once we have the customer base, the word of mouth is still king. And especially in real estate, it's about relationships. It's such a relationship business. I just need to get in front of these people. I show them the product. I show them what it could do. I show them our customer service and the quality of the data, the quality of the platform. Mm-hmm. And they talk to each other about it. But even if it's a finite strategy and like in 5 years, we don't rank for any of that. There is no rank, right? It's all just generative AI searching. Cool. Well, I made the intros already. I already got the traffic I needed to get the relationship part of the business kicked off. So I know it's kind of finite, but I'm also like, hey, let's ride it up to where we need to go. And then we'll drive it with business development.
Every SaaS company plays for high stakes. But what does it take to dominate the market right now? Welcome to Paris Talks Marketing, the podcast where we dive deep into the latest trends and strategies in SaaS marketing that are really working today. I'm your host, Paris, and our guests are SaaS CMOs, founders, and specialists, and we discuss one trendy topic in the industry per episode. Ready to unlock the true power of marketing strategy? In this theme, we'll explore the world of cutting-edge marketing strategies and tactics that are shaking up the SaaS industry. We'll share insights on testing new tactics and uncover the latest developments from digital landscape giants like Google, Facebook, and LinkedIn. We'll also explore how AI is revolutionizing the digital landscape and transforming marketing tactics. So grab your headphones and get ready for a marketing strategy masterclass with Paris Talks Marketing. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Paris Talks Marketing. Today, I'm with Mark Rutzen. Mark is the CEO and co-founder of Hello Data, and he is the proud owner of HelloData.ai, an amazing domain, which uses AI and machine learning to help real estate investors and property managers instantly analyze multifamily rent and expense comps, that stands for comparisons, to optimize rental pricing, benchmark expenses, and improve deal flow in any market. So, Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
How long have you been doing Hello Data? How long have you been running the company?
Since May of last year.
Oh, I'm brand new. Not even a year old.
Yeah. So technically launched January of last year, but I don't have a product or anything yet. I joined the team May full time.
Awesome. How's the journey been so far with a small team and a startup?
It's been good. It's a lot of work, but fortunately we did not have to raise because my two co-founders are technical. Nico is a data scientist. Tim's our data engineer, and working with them for 8 years. So we worked together really well. So we did not need to raise. And fortunately I can say we are actually profitable. We're in the black.
Oh, that's awesome. Do you have any plans to raise in the future, or do you know yet?
We're doing it the old fashioned way. We're building things that are valuable, and then using the money from selling them to build more value.
That's great. The bootstrapping approach. And I have to ask this before we get into what the product is and what it does, but you've got the domain name, hellodata.ai. How were you able to snag that domain?
We kind of debated for a while what to call the company. We didn't know initially what we were going to do. We just knew we wanted to do another startup. We were like, okay, let's try some stuff and see what domains are available. We actually bought several. So we bought like realtype.ai. We bought floorplans.ai. That's actually a pretty good domain. But ultimately, Hello Data, we know in real estate, the biggest issue that everyone has is accurate and timely data. So we figured probably going to do something in prop tech because that's our background. And Hello Data gives us the flexibility to, if we decide to go some other route, like document extraction was an initial route we considered. Hello Data worked for everything. It's like, say hello to your data, right? Like that sort of thing. So we saw it available on Namecheap and we're like, what the heck? I can't believe that's actually available. So we just bought it right away as soon as we saw it. We got lucky.
That's an awesome domain. And it does give you so many flexible options if you want to pivot or expand.
Yeah.
You know, but that's amazing. So what the software does right now is it's targeted towards property managers, leasing agents, and it's helping them understand how to set rent prices more accurately according to real-time data from the market. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah. So a little bit of background. I actually started my career in real estate. I was doing real estate development and brokerage starting in 2011. For 5 years, I was doing the very manual process of going to property websites and listing sites, cobbling together data, putting it in Excel, and then doing weighted averages and my own sort of filtering and analysis to prove out market rents. Mm-hmm. Problem is, at the end of the day, that's a very manual process. It's very time consuming. And you don't have much certainty in those numbers. You're making a lot of assumptions and you're kind of using your best judgment, but you could be wrong. It just was crazy to me in 5 years of doing that, that like, that's how it works. That's how people are figuring out what their market rent should. And I thought, it can't be this way. So I ended up launching my first startup called Enodo in 2016 to try to solve the problem. And that platform would basically aggregate a whole bunch of data, demographic, economic, and rent data from all over the country, and tell you, if you do the granite countertops, the hardwood floors, the roof deck, how much more rent can you actually get? That performed very well. We got a bunch of big names on the platform pretty early on. I mean, we're only selling for 10 months. And then we got an offer from one of the biggest lenders in the country to acquire us. And it was a good multiple. It was a good time. I was like, yeah, I'm 30. I'll take an exit. This sounds great. And so I joined them. I ended up rising through the ranks. I took my team of 10 over from Enodo and scaled it up to around 40. I rose up to chief product officer. We built tech that helped them shave like 30% off their underwriting times, made the company really, really efficient. And then after 4 years of doing it, I was like, man, this is still a problem. Like the problem's not solved. I had startups pitching me like, buy our data for your internal systems. And their data was not very good. I'm like, man, there has to be a way to solve this problem. And so Tim, Nico, and I, they're my first two hires at my last startup. And now they're my co-founders. We decided, let's solve this problem once and for all. Let's make automated market rent surveys and revenue management to help people price their units accurately based on real-time data.
So this data is driven from actual surveys?
No. So when we say rent survey, it's looking at the competitors' rents, right? So what we do is we go to property websites for our main source of data. We go to tens of thousands of them nationwide because every day they push new listings, new availabilities, new concessions to their property websites. If we can't get it from the property websites, we go to several different listing sites where people post their own residence or their property for list, or they list their units there. And so we catch in total about 25 million units nationwide that we're tracking every day. And then 2.3 million multifamily properties, like actual buildings in our database. And it's growing every day, but we have a huge swath of the market already.
That's amazing. Do you also cover short-term rentals?
We're not so much on Airbnb, not so much on single family, although we do SFR and BTR communities, which tend to be, they call them horizontal multifamily a lot of the times because they're just like spread out. They're single family residences, but for rent. Those are managed in a similar way to vertical multifamily. So we track those too.
Okay. So who's the primary ICP that you're selling to, the ideal customer profile?
Top managers and owners across the US. Interestingly, we started with the thesis that we had to serve the under 100 unit property operators because they didn't have a good revenue management solution. And then we found it's just very hard because they tend to be the ones that want to haggle on price and they tend to be the ones that use it for one deal and then they leave so that the churn metrics don't look as good. And they just don't have the capacity to pay for the software. So it's a lot more difficult to get that user base. We went after them. We tried to do it, but then we started getting the big guys coming in and more, and they were talking to each other about how good Blackboard was. So we're like, okay, let's just sell to the people who want the product. So we changed our strategy and now we're selling to the largest owners and managers.
So what is the total addressable market given that type of an ICP? How many companies are out there that are legit prospects for you all, roughly?
Quite a few. We did an initial calculation when we thought we were going to raise. This was like 7 months ago at this point, that the total addressable market was around $4 billion because it's not just the revenue management and price setting side. It's also the acquisitions teams that are looking at deals that need to evaluate what market rents will be if they buy this thing. It's also the consultants who are trying to advise others on price and where rent should be. It's the brokers, it's the appraisers, it's the lenders, right? So it expands well beyond just daily pricing, it's daily pricing plus deal analysis across the board. And that's actually a pretty broad market.
Yeah. But right now, most of your current customers are property managers. Is that right?
Our power users are property managers, but it's actually half and half, I would say. Actually, I take that back. It's split kind of three way. So we have large property managers and asset managers who are doing the daily pricing and the weekly pricing calls. So they are our most frequent users because they need to set pricing almost every day, right? Or advise owners on their pricing every day. We have acquisitions teams, which they're deal-based, but they're looking at a lot more deals these days because most of the stuff they're looking at doesn't pencil. But when rates went up, no one wants to accept a lower price for their property, but rates being higher makes cap rates higher. It just makes sense. No one's going to take on additional risk for a real estate investment when they could just get a high interest rate in a savings account. So cap rates go higher, property values go down, everyone sits on their property for a little bit longer. That's why acquisitions teams are looking at more deals than they have historically because they can't find ones that actually work. And so they're using our platform pretty frequently to evaluate deals. A lot of value adds, a lot of straight acquisition and development, right? Because you can analyze a ground up development and do the same thing in our platform. Source comms, figure out rents, figure out where to price. And then the third group is actually API users. Because one thing that's very unique, that's a competitive differentiator for us, everything in our interface is available via API. So we sell to other prop tech companies and to large institutional owners who want to pull it into their Power BI, data warehouse, whatever it may be. So that's kind of the three prongs of our approach. And, you know, we welcome all, anyone who's analyzing deals or trying to set pricing. I mean, there's use cases that we see new stuff every day. People come in and we're like, oh, we didn't even think about that. Like, assessors, right, trying to send county assessors trying to analyze their housing stock. That's something that we have a computer vision algorithm to do as part of our comp rhythm. And so we got some come in for that. I'm like, oh, that's a new market also to assessors. That's kind of cool.
You just mentioned computer vision. So are you able to analyze the furniture quality of finishes inside and be able to adjust pricing based on like materials and interior quality?
That's the core of one of the core components of our comparable property detection app. So what we do is as we collect the data from these listings, our algorithm analyzes the photos. It determines the room type, the amenities, and the condition and quality of each room. And then we aggregate this into a composite score for each property. And so our algorithm for comps uses that as a parameter. It's about 20% of the weight in our model to get properties that are similar or units that are similar from a resident's perspective. Because they're going to look at, is it the location I want, the price I want, and then how does it look? Do I want to schedule a showing? And so we capture that really well. And combined with the investor side, like the unit count of the building, the number of stories, sort of like the hard physical attributes of the asset, our comp algorithm detects 9 out of 10. So we have 9 out of 10 overlap with appraiser's rent comp selections for multifamily deals, which is what you need to get financing. So it's kind of the only metric that matters at the end of the day.
Which metric is that? I didn't catch it.
So when you go to finance a multifamily deal, you always need to get an appraisal by a licensed appraiser. And so our algorithm identifies 9 out of 10 of the same rent comps that an appraiser identifies when they put together their assessment evaluation. That is probably the best indicator of how well it works. You know, feedback is one thing, but like the empirically proving out that we can do that, that's been huge.
Awesome. Let's get into some of the marketing aspects here. I'm looking at the website. How are you generally, what is the go-to-market strategy? You've got a lot of different personas. I can see beyond property managers, the investors and brokers, appraisers, real estate developers, and prop tech selling the technology and the data direct. So how do you go to market to each of those uniquely? And generally, what's the strategy for marketing and growth?
Well, I've been in real estate and tech for a while, so I have a decent number of connections in the industry. So I started there. I was just reaching out to people I know who could be a good fit. That's worked well. I'm probably starting to approach the end of like my warm contacts that I can get to do business with us, but we still got some gas in the tank there. That was the start point, right? Because they're going to give you frank feedback and help you improve the product. And we got some contacts that I made early in my career are now power users of our platform, helped us make it a lot better. Now that we have product market fit though, Now we feel it because we're having inbound demos like crazy. We're getting word of mouth now. People who are piloting our software are telling other people that are also institutional LARC players, you should definitely check this out. They haven't even paid us yet, and they're referring us to other people because they're in like halfway through their trial period. So we like know we have product market fit now. So there's a couple different components of this. One is we've been posting on LinkedIn. That's like our best channel. My last startup, part of the strategy was connect with people that were acquisitions teams and property managers who we were selling to at our last startup and connect with them on LinkedIn, put them in our HubSpot, and then target ads and emails to them so that we can get the touch points. They see us connect on LinkedIn, they see an email from us, they see an ad, then one of our salespeople reaches out, then they do a cold call to them after they've reached out by email. Like it gets enough touch points that they start to engage. Well, from doing that back in the day, 7 years ago at this point, I have like 19,000 LinkedIn connects. And a lot of them, like I do know from the industry, but a lot of them I've not really met, but they connected with me. And so they've been seeing my posts over several years now. Now, whenever we post new feature updates, we post like, oh, this is what's happening with the company. We'll be at this event. We get a lot of traction on those. We get a lot of people liking and sharing and commenting. I'm not an influencer by any means. I'm not like a marketing guru, but because of that reach, we do have a lot of eyeballs on the content. I post first, or Tim and Nico post first, and then we reshare on our company page on LinkedIn. So that's been a really good lead gen source. Then SEO has been the other, because we were initially going after that lower end market and can only reach them through SEO. There's no way you can like e-blast to them or personally reach out and really cover them. A lot of them are just on Gmail or AOL emails, right? They're wealthy property owners. They have portfolios, but they're kind of off the grid. Like they're not playing around on social media. They're not going to a ton of conferences except local stuff. So we started with the SEO approach. And basically what we've been doing is like a real estate dictionary where we define real estate terms that are specific to multifamily or specific concepts in real estate that don't have any competitive traffic. Like we use Ahrefs every day and we look at, oh, these keywords have no competition and the traffic is like 30 or 20 to 30 a day, sometimes 50, sometimes more. And I'm like, all right, let me just define that term really well and concisely. And then I post an article for it. I try to do 5 a day. And so I've been putting them out there. And yeah, you can see it here.
I'm pulling up the traffic growth. So literally in the last year, looking at the last 6 months only.
We started the strategy end of November. I started doing it. So just post the article, index it. And then I've been doing blog posts too, indexing those as soon as I do. We're rising quickly there.
Did you mention you're trying to put out 5 posts per day? How do you write that? Or are you using AI for that?
Of course. We use AI for everything, right? So we found a system to prompt ChatGPT in such a way that it doesn't produce a garbage response. We basically found a way to, and I experimented like a ton with this. I found a way to get the featured snippets by prompting correctly. So we get the term with low competition. We craft it in such a way that we're very likely to get a featured snippet. And then we answer the term succinctly and provide like an example, post it, index it. I edit them. I'm not going to just pass straight what ChatGPT says. I check it and then I go through and I remove. It's important to note, you should also do, no, I just delete that. It's like essentially this, it's got the same words it uses over and over. I edit out and get straight to the point, answer it as succinctly as possible. And that has really worked and it's starting to pull in a lot of traffic.
Prior to writing the content, do you do any sort of an outline or a brief where you structure it based on subtopics that are relevant to the main topic?
I do for some of them, right? If it's just a simple answer without like a broader subtopic, I'll just post it. But if it's something like real estate syndication, right? There's a lot of different facets to real estate syndication. So you got to know which documents are involved, what regulations are involved. And so when I covered that, I had like, what is real estate syndication? And then all the related terms that people have to understand. And I internally linked them all. And then I posted and indexed them. And then we started to shoot up for related terms. And some of these are like funny because click pay, is a well-known product by RealPage, which is a really well-known company. But for some reason, they didn't define the term very well. So people are asking, what is ClickPay? I'm just like, yeah, I'll answer what is ClickPay. It is a multifamily product. And so I just answered that question perfectly. And now we're number one.
Probably got the featured snippet too, huh?
Yeah, it's the approach. It's the prompt that we have for it. It just gets us like exactly the right language for the featured snippet. And then I just take out the junk that GPT puts in there and add my own spin on some of them. You know, if I have like a personal anecdote to add, I'll throw that in there. That's sort of.
Yeah. I'm going to pull up this article that you mentioned. What is ClickPay and how is it used? Yeah, this is a relatively short article too. Probably this is under 500 words. But I guess, I mean, if you're really trying to directly answer the question, get the featured snippet, it's not about length. No, it's more about the succinctness of the answer and answer right up front.
Yeah, you answer it right up front. You want to do like three sentences and then cover the full breadth of the topic in just the first sentences with a relevant H2. And then it works very well. And then, you know, if you could provide a few examples of how it's used, that's always helpful. It's a pretty straightforward strategy. It's just about consistency. You just keep doing it day after day. And if I miss like a couple of days because I'm like in demo after demo, I'll go on the weekend and I'll do like 15 of them and I'll make up for it. Just so we always have it coming out, always moving up on that growth curve.
Yeah. Did I hear you mention that you're using an H2 basically for the answer, like the opening?
So I'll do like for the title of the post, like the actual question a lot of the time. And then for the H2, I've started doing more like a rewording of the question. Like, so what is ClickPay? Or if they're saying like, what is ClickPay and how is it used? That's a good title for the post, but then I'll call it something like ClickPay overview. This one I did a while back. I say a while, probably like a month and a half, but not that long ago. But now I've started to do overview on ClickPay or that sort of thing to give some variation in the H2. And then I go into the three sentence answer.
Gotcha. And this is pretty incredible here. Hopefully those who are going to watch the video episode, you'll see that you're outranking clickpay.com here with this.
That's first.
So.
Low hanging fruit.
Yeah. This must drive them crazy, but you're answering the question better than they're describing themselves. So.
That's what it's about. I mean, we are doing this mostly for the brand recognition, right? Because they get the answer right there. They don't have to click into it. I don't care if someone's searching for ClickPay and they click on our post because it's an informational thing. But when they do search it, they see Hello Data, which they've never been exposed to before. And they do that over and over again, especially early in their career where they have these questions a lot of the time. Then they're going to remember us and come back when they see an interesting piece on LinkedIn or somewhere else.
Yeah. That said, there are still a lot of people clicking here. I mean, as you can see, this hockey stick here, that's amazing. Now, a quick word from our sponsor. The Paris Talks Marketing Show is affiliated with Hop Online, a performance marketing agency focused on high-growth SaaS and other recurring revenue-based companies. If you like the flow of this conversation, you may want to consider jumping on a discovery call with someone at Hop Online. A discovery call is similar to my podcast interviews in a lot of ways. We'll get to know your business goals, competitive landscape, and marketing needs. And you'll almost certainly come away with some new ideas for how to accelerate your customer and revenue growth. If you're interested, go to hop.online, that's hop, H-O-P, dot online, and book a discovery call with one of our strategists today. Now, back to the episode. So I've heard a lot of theories and a lot of what you read out there so far is that Google doesn't want to rank or would even penalize pure ChatGPT generated or AI generated content. But I think if it's done smartly, like what you're describing.
If you pass it through exactly, there's all the filler words and it's important to note or it's essential to understand. Like, I hate that. I hate that writing stuff. You start to see it over and over.
Yeah. You know what I'm pretty geeked out about now is this Gemini Advance just dropped yesterday. And yeah, you may have seen it, but I think what you can do here, there's an option. Let me see if I can pull up an example. But so you can show different drafts. So they'll show you three different drafts that they use and you can switch among the drafts. And then down here, I can select an option, modify response, and I can make it more casual. or simpler. So a lot of times I think the initial version coming out of ChatGPT, it's a little bit too stiff, or maybe it's too jargony a lot of times.
It's really interesting. I tried to get it to write blog posts. It sucks at blog posts. It's so, so bad. It sounds like someone who does not understand the topic at all. It's like an AI trying to speak like a human, like it thinks a human would write a blog. And you could tell in every line, it just sounds awful. So I just stopped trying to do that. It's good at answering factual questions succinctly. What is this? How does this work? Give examples. Okay, I could do that well. If you say, hey, write a blog post that covers these topics, no, it's garbage, at least for our industry. Everything I've tried to do that way has been garbage.
So ChatGPT is still superior to even Gemini Advanced?
I haven't played around with it that much, so I got to check it out.
Are you referring to Bard, the previous version of this?
I tried Bard before. Bard was not very good from what I saw. I didn't like it a whole lot. It depends on what you're using it for and for content I was trying to generate. GPT was bad at blogs. Bard was bad at blogs. Everything I've seen, I've tried out there was bad at blogs. But when you ask it factual things, like examples of X, it tends to do pretty well with that. You just need to clean up the language because it's got a lot of pillar text and transition words and all kinds of garbage that you want to take out.
Gotcha. And how do you conduct the original keyword research to give you all these topics? I mean, 5 a day, and I mean, that's like 150 or so a month. Where does the topic flow originate from?
Oh, we go to Ahrefs.
Okay.
We're looking for low keyword difficulty, decent volume, and related to our industry. You know, typically you want to serve a business purpose with what you're posting there, right? So they can click on it and then they become a lead for you. And we do that with our blog posts. Our blog posts are very much like, this is an industry topic that is important. We've compared ourselves to competitors. We talked high level about like what's going on with the lawsuits around revenue management. We post that stuff on LinkedIn too. So it's like, write the blog, post it on social, put it in one of our e-blasts. But for the informational stuff, the help center, it covers a more broad range. It's like, define this term. Give me some examples of this. I was just doing some stuff on like regulations around like specific SEC regulations and what they mean. And I'm actually learning in this process because I'll research it a bit on Google and then I'll research it in ChatGPT and kind of see what the summary is. And I don't know if you've tried this yet, but like if you ask GPT to use Bing to do the research, you could actually get more. It does a pretty good job with that. It goes in and researches and summarizes all the top ranking posts on it. I'm like, that's actually a decent summary of what's going on with, for example, these lawsuits and revenue management. So I'm like, oh, I'll use that as a basis and then I'll put my own expertise. I'll change the wording up. It worked pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah, this, what is it called? Retrieval Augmented Generation. The acronym is RAG. I was looking into this just yesterday because I think that's the future of search. It is going to be search assisted because GPT alone, it's a large language model and it usually doesn't catch real-time information. But if you can layer that, or if you can layer on top of that, a search function with data retrieval and real-time data, especially, then it's powerful. And I've been seeing that with ChatGPT 4 Turbo, which is that a lot of the prompts I can see that it says it's searching Bing and there's a little timer. So I know it's going out and trying to extract data from Bing, any kind of like real-time data to provide a real-time context for the answer.
I like how it works. I think it does a pretty good job with it. I mean, you can craft it like you define this and then give some examples of it and then what's going on with this. And then it goes, just Bing, and that's, oh, okay. That's pretty good synopsis. Let's work off of that. Again, don't pass it through as is, but you clean it up, you layer in your own expertise. It actually does a pretty decent job.
Yeah. I even think the future of search and SEO, it's going to be shifting. This chat experience where you can have an exchange, I'll give you an example, and this is totally off topic, but I was looking for a cauliflower recipe. And I decided to do a comparison between ChatGPT and Google. I went to ChatGPT and I got a recipe, but then I realized, all right, what's missing from here is what temperature should I cook it on? So then I quickly followed up. What is the right temperature to cook on? Oh, okay, 220 degrees Celsius. All right, and then something else occurred to me, which is that I don't have Parmesan cheese. Is there other substitutes for that? yeah, sure, here are a few substitutes. And then I said, oh, you know what? Actually, what if I substituted the cauliflower with broccoli? Is that a pretty one-to-one substitution? It said, yeah, you can do that. No problem. So right away, I mean, in a matter of minutes. Oh, and then I was heading out to the grocery too. I was in the metro on my phone doing this, heading to the grocery. So I said, give me a quick list of ingredients that I need to buy for this. And then boom, it was there. And so that experience on Google, it was entirely different. So first of all, I got a bunch of images. When I searched cauliflower recipe, I had to click in. But you're going article by article, and each article has a different recipe. I have to keep bouncing back to the SERP and then asking a different question. It's not really a conversation. It's me having to dig in and pull out different answers from articles, recipes.
And pretty much it ads too, right? You gotta, like, the first 5 results are ads. I'm like, what the heck? Have you seen the Arc browser? This new approach that's basically doing what GPT does, but pulling in images, pulling in videos, pulling in exactly the content to fully cover the topic without you having through ads and it, click into it, see it's not what you like, go to the next one, go to the next one. I think it's going to be a game changer. I think also GPT can probably do that same thing with some modification. It could be the Arc browser already, but I saw a promo video for this product. I'm like, yeah, pretty cool. I mean, they're right. It is labor intensive to go try to find the right answer on Google. It's just not geared for that anymore.
Yeah, I think it's the ability to also to ask clarifying questions and then to be able to refine. Sometimes I don't even know what I'm searching for exactly, you know? And I need to have a conversation in order to arrive at a clear understanding of what I'm looking for, actually.
Right.
So that's what it, I think that's what it solves for. So, I mean, your SEO success is extremely impressive. But can you imagine 1 or 2 years out where more people are going to be going and having conversations in these chatbots? And I don't think they have a monetization plan yet, but the users are going to drive this one way or the other. And I just wonder how those experiences can give attribution to the brands that are supplying them with the answers, you know?
Yeah, I do feel like SEO, like the traditional way it's been done, has a finite lifespan now. The age of generative AI, even the stuff I'm doing, I'm using GPT and I'm crafting these posts and I'm doing it consistently. It's working, but I know that that's a finite strategy. The thing for us is we want the growth because we're a startup. Once we have the customer base, the word of mouth is still king. And especially in real estate, it's about relationships. It's such a relationship business. I just need to get in front of these people. I show them the product, I show them what it could do, I show them our customer service and the quality of the data, the quality of the platform, and they talk to each other about it. But even if it's a finite strategy and like in 5 years, we don't rank for any of that, there is no rank, right? It's all just generative AI searching. Cool. Well, I made the intros already. I already got the traffic I needed to get the relationship part of the business kicked off. So I know it's kind of finite, but I'm also like, hey, let's ride it up to where we need to go. And then we'll drive it with business development.
Yeah. And it's not as though there's not going to be other marketing channels that will emerge. I think there is going to be some form of SEO for generative AI. I mean, it might be Gen AI optimization, but I think clearly Google is maybe already has this business model figured out. But with Gemini, if more people are going to start going to Gemini, there are no ads there today, but it's going to start with citations. And then I don't know if it's going to be ad driven or a combination of subscription plus ads. Looks like they're starting with subscription for the advanced product. But I think that if there's no incentive for publishers to be feeding the large language models, if they're not going to get any attribution credit later, they'll stop doing it. And then those large language models will themselves dry up, I think. So the content still has to be created to feed these models, and those content creators need an incentive. And today that incentive is, well, I think ultimately I want to rank and get traffic coming to my website where I have a controlled brand experience. But then later, I don't know, it might be something different. It's hard to tell right now.
Well, to that point, like model collabs is something that is super interesting. So if everyone produced all of their blog posts with GPT, then GPT would be training on GPT's content. And it's making a copy of a copy. It gets worse and worse until the model collapses because it can't come up with a novel response to anything. You need the variation in responses, the variation in content. So it's a real concern. The more that happens, the more it's really important to filter out that content. I'd make sure that it's not being trained on that. I ultimately will figure it out for sure, but it's going to be interesting. It's already been interesting.
It sounds as though you're taking advantage as an early mover here, because I think still most people that are publishing content to websites are still writing it for the most part with human writers. But there's a window and you're seizing this opportunity where you're early mover and moving aggressively and it is working. But if you play this out, like you just said, if you play this out a few more steps and if everybody is doing that, then the large language models will start to just devour themselves, I guess, because they're going to be learning on stuff that they've produced and then there won't be any more learning happening, actually. I mean, if there isn't any human original thought that is seeding this content, I'm not sure what will happen.
Hard to anticipate, but I think if the whole browser market just changes to a generative model, then really hard to anticipate. I don't even know what that looks like at this point. It feels like better than what's there today, but we don't know what it's going to look like and all the implications of that. I could go through the mental exercise of trying to map it out and figure it out, but like we'll just be agile and respond as things happen and then seize opportunities.
Yeah, that's the key, is agility. Absolutely. Well, this has been really fascinating. And I guess we could go on a lot longer, but we probably should wrap it up soon here. What did I not ask you that you wished I would have asked you? Or is there anything else that you feel could benefit our audience, Mark?
I think it's been a good conversation, and nothing else. I mean, I get to talk about the product, talk about our marketing. I knew this would be a good one. So I appreciate you taking the time.
Same here. And where is the best place for people to find you online?
Go to hellodata.ai, hellodata.ai, that's our domain. Or I guess you can just search, what is ClickPay?
Yeah, what is ClickPay? And of course, LinkedIn, it's Mark.
Yeah, LinkedIn, sure.
Mark with a C and Rutzen, R-U-T-Z-E-N.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being with me today, Mark. This was a great conversation and I hope that we keep in touch. And good luck with Hello Data. It sounds like you're off to a great start.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
You too.
Another great episode in the books. Hope you enjoyed it. If you want to get notified when future episodes drop, be sure to subscribe to Paris Talks Marketing on your favorite podcast player. And to learn more about our growth marketing agency, visit hop.online. That's hop, H-O-P.online. Have a great day.